Peter B. Collins with news and comment for you on Thursday, July 12th, 2012. Don't you hate it when some of your favorite songs show up in commercials for corporate entities? That's what happened to this song.
London calling to the faraway towns. Now war is declared and battle come down. London calling to the underworld. Come out of the
Yes, one of my favorite songs of all time, London Calling by The Clash, has been commandeered as the theme music for NBC's coverage of the London Summer Olympics. And the late Joe Strummer is probably spitting in his grave. He wouldn't bother to roll over. And I really dig The Clash. They were an important band, I think, in the 1980s. And you can argue that they sold out a long time ago. And I wouldn't have much evidence to offer against that point of view. But last night, as I was watching television, it just really hit hard when that song, which is a kind of edgy punk anthem, was used to promote NBC's coverage of the Summer Olympics. And today, The Flap, led by coverage from ABC News and a response from members of Congress, including some Democrats, is that the uniforms that have been custom-made for the 530 athletes who will represent the United States at the Summer Olympics were made in China. Now, when I first heard this, my immediate suspicion was, well, these are Nike uniforms, right? Everything Nike does is made in China. But I was wrong. It turns out Ralph Lauren was the designer, and his company had these uniforms manufactured in China. And this is annoying. I do support the notion that American athletes ought to be wearing American-made clothing. But all too often, we hear these complaints way too late in the process. It's too late now to manufacture new uniforms, and so these people are just whistling past the graveyard. I think that's the right way to use that cliche. And it happened here in the San Francisco area. They're constructing part of a new section of the bridge between San Francisco and Oakland called the Bay Bridge. And it was Arnold Schwarzenegger who let the contract 5 years ago, maybe six. And labor leaders waited until the steel was already on the bridge to complain that it was all made in China. Now, we don't have steel mills in the United States anymore, and that is a serious error in judgment. We never should have allowed that to happen. But it is the case. And so when these people started complaining about the Bay Bridge, I could only scratch my bald head and say, why weren't you paying attention when the budget was set, the contract was let? Well, too little, too late. Now it's the Bain factor. B-A-I-N, not B-A-N-E. I think Mitt Romney will become the bane of our existence, B-A-N-E. But right now, the Obama campaign has been tweaking Mitt Romney with a TV commercial which hits Romney for the facts about when he actually resigned from Bain Capital and left the company. He says it was in 1999 when he left to manage the Olympics in Salt Lake City. But records on file with the Securities Exchange Commission and other documents show that Romney, at least on paper, was active with Bain Capital for several years thereafter. And this becomes important because during that period of time, several companies that Bain took over and vulturized did a lot of outsourcing. And the Obama team wants to use that against Romney in this campaign. And fundamentally, we do need to know the truth and whether Mitt Romney has been honest about this. One of the other factors that I haven't seen in the coverage in the New York Times and a few other places where I've seen coverage of this is that Mitt Romney claims a low tax rate. If you recall, he gave us a peek at his tax returns from, 2010, and it showed that he paid a shade under 15% overall in taxes. And he achieved that by using a loophole for what is called carried interest. And that loophole, as I understand it, and I'm not a tax expert, but from what I've read, that loophole is only available to people who, say, retire from a company but maybe stay on the board of directors or stay on as a consultant. They have to have some continuing role in order to qualify for the carried interest exception. And I'm waiting to see if that will surface. So mark my words if you care to, and see if this becomes an issue in the battle over Bain between Obama and Romney. And speaking of tax rates, do you know that in 2009, the effective average tax rate for Americans reached the lowest point in three decades? And this just underscores the hypocrisy of Republicans who say, oh, we got to extend all the Bush tax cuts. You can't raise taxes on anybody during a recession. Well, taxes have been cut to an all-time low, at least over the last 30 years. And the crocodile tears that the one percenters and their shills shed for us are just that. And I hope that Democrats will come out fighting and not be afraid to be painted as the party that wants to raise taxes. We've got to frame this as an issue of tax fairness. And that means that some people will have their taxes increased, particularly those who earn $1 million a year or more. From last Sunday's New York Times, and because I was traveling, I've just caught up with this, a front page story talks about the way corporations are funneling money into political campaigns this year. And despite the Citizens United decision, which allows them to funnel the money in directly to independent expenditure campaigns, the so-called super PACs, most corporations are laundering their money through phony nonprofits. Why? Well, apparently they don't want to offend shareholders who might take exception to the misuse of corporate money that otherwise might be paid out as dividends to those same shareholders. And that's the position I'm in. I have a modest portfolio, but a number of the companies that I own shares in engage in political activity with money that otherwise should have been paid to me. And as we see the so-called paycheck protection ballot measure in California and elsewhere that would require unions to get individual permission from each member to use their dues money for politics, and the recent case of SEIU, where Justice Sam Alito on the Supreme Court flipped the law and established the precedent that unions have to get an opt-in from their non-member members. And I know that's confusing, a non-member member, but in closed shops, people can elect to take out a union card but remain technically non-members. And those are often the people who object to spending on progressive causes by their labor unions. And so if we're going to be fair here, we have to have limits on corporate contributions. And if we're going to tie up unions and require them to get individual permission, then every shareholder should be polled and asked for permission before corporate money is used in political campaigns, whether it goes in directly under Citizens United or is laundered through a Crossroads GPS or a Chamber of Commerce phony 501c3 nonprofit. I believe that is the way that should be done. And the efforts to at least rein in the expected abuses under Citizens United, the Disclose Act, we understand will be coming up in the Senate in the next available time period, and I'm not exactly sure when the Senate will take its next vacation, but Harry Reid attempted to bring the Disclose Act, which would require more information on political donors. He attempted to bring it up and faced a Republican filibuster. So keep an eye on that. That could help put a Band-Aid on the hemorrhaging of corporate cash into campaigns. Our friends at CREW, Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington, have filed a complaint against Congressman Daryl Issa, who chairs the Government Oversight Committee that is conducting the Fast and Furious witch hunt. And if you're a regular, you know that I don't believe that Eric Holder is completely innocent in the Fast and Furious case. I think there is a cover-up, and I'm not sure exactly what they're covering up. But the bottom line here is that Daryl Issa's investigation is driven by a mad theory, and that is that Obama and Holder wanted to see these weapons used in some massacre so that they could crack down on the rights of gun owners in the United States. It is so far-fetched and unfounded that I have deep objections to what Daryl Issa is doing. And what CREW has discovered is that he has broken the law. He has used a process to disclose information that should have been kept confidential. And the issue here is that under federal law, applications for wiretap warrants are sealed and cannot be disclosed without a court's permission. So what Daryl Issa did was took this wiretap application information related to Fast and Furious, and he entered it into the congressional record, which is an end run on the prohibition on the secrecy, the privacy, the confidentiality of this wiretap application. Now, I realize this is a technical and some would say trivial issue, but neener. And I hope that all of Daryl Issa's car alarms go off at the same time. Louis Freeh, the former FBI director, has released an exhausting report into the Penn State child abuse activities of Jerry Sandusky. He's been convicted on 45 counts. He'll be sentenced in the next few weeks. And this is quite a report. 400 interviews, they claim they reviewed 3.5 million documents. Goes all the way back to 1998. And it sullies the reputation of the revered football coach, the head coach Joe Paterno, who died in January of this year before the shit really hit the fan. And what it shows is just this pattern of cover-up, that the football program and its coaches were so important to Penn State that they swept under the rug the evidence that surfaced of Sandusky in the shower with a young man, despite the clear evidence of the impropriety of Sandusky's behavior. The president of the university, Paterno himself, and other leaders all covered it up. And I am, for one, pleased that this has been exposed. We need to know about these things, and we need to try to prevent them from happening again. But we know that powerful people are able to abuse others with impunity. And it's really shameful that college football somehow becomes so sacred that people think that you can, you know, ignore the abuse of young boys because football is more important. Ouch. Did you know that there are 5 states that have only 1 abortion clinic in the entire state? Mississippi is one, and the right-wing Republicans who run the state have come up with what they think is a neat idea. They have a new law that requires a doctor who performs abortions to have privileges, admission privileges, at a local hospital. And they did this because the only abortion doctor in the state doesn't have those privileges. And this is an illegal, unconstitutional effort that thumbs its nose at the Supreme Court's decision in Roe versus Wade and says, well, we don't have to observe that in Mississippi. Unfortunately, U.S. District Judge Daniel P. Jordan has temporarily blocked the law, and he extended that order yesterday. And he didn't say exactly when he would rule on the clinic's request to put the law on hold for a longer period of time. And speaking of abuse of the justice system, the Obama Justice Department is cracking down on medical marijuana outlets in California. And I believe this is politically motivated election year grandstanding. Obama knows he will have no trouble carrying the state of California. So he can make targets of our legal medical marijuana distribution points, hoping to score votes in purple states, maybe some red states in other parts of the country. And I'm deeply offended by this because voters in California, exercising states' rights, passed an initiative that permits the distribution of marijuana for medical purposes. And the Harborside Health Center in Oakland, and in full disclosure, I have a friend who does PR for them. I've been there once, met some of the leaders there, and I support the work that they're doing. But the U.S. attorney, based in San Francisco, named Melinda Hogg, H-A-A-G, has announced that, in fact, they posted a notice on the doors of the Harborside Center in Oakland and its other outlet in San Jose, announcing that they're going to shut it down. And this, again, is just another way that politics are interfering with the legal exercise of the rights of individuals in California. And the other way that they're cracking down is they have leaned on banks and the credit card companies Visa and MasterCard and essentially locked off the channel of payment for medical marijuana users who want to use an ATM card or a credit card to buy their weed. And I hope that these efforts are short-term and that after the election, that the boot will be lifted from our collective windpipe. But probably not. I have been sporadically reporting to you on the soap opera here in San Francisco regarding Sheriff Ross Mercurimi. A quick recap, he was elected sheriff last fall, was supposed to be sworn in January. He was, in fact. And a few days before that, on New Year's Eve, he got into an argument with his wife. Her name is Ileana Lopez. She is a former Venezuelan soap opera star, telenovela star. She went to a neighbor and showed this neighbor a bruise on her arm that Mercurimi has admitted he gave to her when he tried to grab her to help her, he says, get out of their minivan with their child. And despite the fact that Ms. Lopez, his wife, said she did not want to press charges, the neighbor who shot the video of her bruised arm turned it over to the cops, and this produced the soap opera that we have. The mayor of San Francisco, who had promised that he wouldn't run for a full term after being asked to serve for a one-year interim period, well, he led the charge to force Sheriff Mercurimi to resign. And when Mercurimi refused, he suspended him without pay. Mercurimi is now before the San Francisco Ethics Commission, which is the first stop on a legal termination proceeding against the elected sheriff. In the Ethics Committee hearings, Mayor Ed Lee offered testimony that has now been challenged. And it clearly appears that the mayor of San Francisco committed perjury before the Ethics Committee when he attempted to offer his testimony as to why Sheriff Mercurimi should be removed from office. And the bottom line is, the mayor testified under oath that he had not spoken to any of the elected supervisors, that's our city council, about the Mercurimi case. And the woman he appointed to succeed Mercurimi, who's a former supervisor, named Christine Olagi, is quoted by friends as saying that the mayor discussed it with her. There's also a friend of the mayor's named Walter Wong, who reportedly went to a friend of Mercurimi's to try to broker a deal to get him to resign as sheriff by promising him another job, either in city government or in the private sector. Ed Lee, the mayor, under oath, denied both of those. He denied that he ever talked to any supervisor about it, and he denied that through an intermediary that he offered Mercurimi a face-saving way out. Well, Mercurimi's lawyers have pounced on this, accused him of perjury, and this just makes this, it goes from a soap opera to some sort of a chaotic drama. And the mayor is maintaining that he did not lie, but I think the facts suggest otherwise. So we'll keep you posted on this as the world turns and as the Ethics Commission churns. And finally, here in San Francisco, Apple Computer is off the approved purchase list for the city and county of San Francisco. And this relates to the fact that Apple recently made a decision to pull out of an international green electronics certification program. And San Francisco has ordinances that says they will only buy computers and other electronic gear from companies that sign on to this green electronics certification program. It's not clear why Apple withdrew from the program, but it puts it in a pickle. And at least for now, the city of San Francisco will not be buying any more iPhones, iPads, MacBook Pros, or any of those other products from Apple. Thanks for listening to our free news and comment podcast. Be sure to share it with your friends and send me your reaction, peter@peterbcollins.com.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling.